By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
I'm Danielle Reed, and this is Moody's Talks, Focus on Finance. In today's episode, from London, my co-host Miles Nelligan will talk with insurance analysts Helena Kingsley-Tompkins in London and Paulette Truman in New York about how technology is changing the insurance business now and what those changes might mean for the insurance business of the future. Miles, thanks for coming back to the show.
Thanks very much, Danielle. It's always a pleasure.
Miles, today we get to cover tech and the future, including the future of cars and insurance, which is always a fun topic. Briefly, what are some key points from your conversation with Helena and Paulette?
Well, as we'll hear in a minute, Helena is going to be talking about her research into the changes that technology is bringing to the insurance business. Now, these will be broadly positive over the next few years, but over the next couple of decades, they could in fact be negative. So, for example, in the short term, the high-tech safety features that we increasingly find in the car and in the home might reduce accidents, and that would in turn lead to lower insurance claims. But in the much longer term, the decline in insurance claims could actually reduce demand for insurance, or at least for the kind of insurance products that are commonly sold today.
I see. So as the world gets safer in some ways, or at least risk kind of shrinks, that's actually a negative for insurers in some way, which is interesting. What about Paulette? What did she have to say?
Well, Paulette's going to talk us through the inner workings of telematics technology for US auto insurers. Telematics are plug-in or built-in technology in cars, which allows insurers to get lots of data in very fine detail about how well or how badly insured drivers are driving. It captures indicators like how fast and how hard they brake, how long they drive for, all of that kind of thing.
Right. And insurers give you discounts if you drive well and not so much if you don't.
That's exactly the idea. Yeah.
I am really looking forward to hearing that conversation a little later on. But first, we have Fast Finance, where Moody's analysts discuss the credit effects of topics in the news. Joining us now from Hong Kong SAR, we have banking team analyst Sunny Xu here to tell us what the results of the Hong Kong Monetary Authority's bank stress test on climate risk means for bank credit in the region. Sunny, welcome to Focus on Finance.
Hi, Daniel. It's my pleasure.
So the results of the first bank stress test on climate risk in Hong Kong were just published. And first of all, to briefly sketch the parameters of the stress test for listeners, it covered 27 banks, which is, I believe, 80% of Hong Kong banks. What kinds of climate stress did it look at?
The stress test mainly measures risks from two different aspects. One is physical risk from climate change, and the other one is transition risk towards a lower carbon emission environment. In terms of physical risk, it tries to measure the impact of more frequent severe weather events from both floods and typhoons. And in terms of transition risk, it tries to measure the impact on high emission industries, high emission borrowers in two different scenarios. One is an orderly scenario. The other one is a disorderly scenario.
Okay. And in the disorderly scenario, I guess you mean the government gets to imposing its policies later, right?
Right. So it does so later, but that leads to more disruption on the borrower's operations.
Okay, I see. And before we get to the results of the test, you said in your report the stress test is credit positive. How is it positive?
Yeah, so I think one way or another, the stress test indicates that banks will bear higher credit costs, both from physical climate change and from transition to lower carbon emissions. However, through the stress test, the regulator forces the banks to develop their capability to assess the risks. And ultimately, through that, they will be able to take mitigating measures to lower the potential risks and mitigate the cost of climate change.
I see. That makes sense. And getting to the results of the test, what would you say are the key takeaways?
Yeah, so I think the most important takeaway is that Hong Kong banks are well capitalized, so they have sufficient capital and profitability to absorb the potential higher losses from climate change. That said, between the physical climate change stress and transition to lower carbon emissions, the stress test outcome is that banks will face higher losses from the transition to lower carbon emission. In particular, in the disorderly scenario where the borrowers do not take meaningful measures between now and 2030, but however, from 2030 onwards, they will have to take more drastic measures, meaning there will be more disruptions on their operations. That will lead to greater impact on these borrowers, and banks will face higher credit losses. In contrast, in the physical climate change scenario, even though it leads to lower collateral on certain lending, banks are not expected to suffer as great credit losses on their lending, and the impact will be lower on banks' loan losses. And this outcome is consistent with Moody's view as well. Moody's just assigned ESG scores to a large number of financial institutions in December. And in our view, the transition to lower carbon emissions pose greater risks on banks' asset quality and operation than physical climate change. So Moody's own view is consistent with the regulator's stress test outcome.
Sunny, thank you so much. And we're now joined by Jasper Cooper, who will tell us about the effects on U.S. property and casualty, or P&C, insurers of the Colorado wildfire that struck at the end of December. Jasper, welcome back to Focus on Finance.
Thanks, Danielle. I'm glad to be back.
Jasper, the Marshall Fire in Boulder County, Colorado, was in the news at the end of last year, right at the start of the year, as it brought tragic loss of life and destroyed homes and businesses in the area. What can you say about the effect on P&C insurance?
Yeah, so the Marshall Fire struck parts of Boulder County in Colorado on the 30th of December. It was a fairly quick fire. It only lasted a few hours, but due to the strong downslope winds, it was actually the most destructive fire in Colorado history. It damaged or destroyed about 1,100 homes and businesses, including two hotels and large retailers like Target, Costco, OfficeMax, PetSmart, a Tesla dealership, and actually a number of small businesses as well. Catastrophe modeling firm Karen Clark and Company put out an estimate that insured losses will total about $1 billion. However, with strong demand and rising costs in the residential and commercial construction markets, we think the increase in demand, with a bunch of homes being rebuilt at the same time for construction labor and materials, could result in higher insured losses. The fires will raise the combined ratio for the fourth quarter for homeowners and commercial property insurers who write business in Colorado. But the fire's limited footprint makes it difficult to determine which insurers are going to bear the most losses. In addition, some of the large retailers are likely to partially or fully self-insured, which would reduce losses for property insurers.
Thanks, Jasper. Now, it was a little later in the year than we usually hear about wildfires, right? Is climate change a potential contributing factor here, would you say?
Yeah, it very likely was. The conditions were unusually warm and dry for December, and there's been an increase in the hot and dry downslope winds from the Rockies, which causes fire to spread rapidly. And on top of that, the Western U.S. has been experiencing drought conditions all year. So Colorado has been experiencing more and more destructive wildfires in recent years, and 2020 was the previous record. The thing to remember about the Marshall Fire is that it could have been a lot worse. It only burnt around 6,000 acres before the winds died down and the snowstorm extinguished the fire. But in contrast, if you look at the previous most destructive wildfire, it was the East Troublesome Fire in October of 2020, which destroyed 500 structures but burnt 194,000 acres. So we think that global warming is causing Colorado wildfire losses to be a bigger risk for homeowners and commercial property insurers in the state.
Jasper, thank you so much. If you're listening to this show and you'd like to hear more episodes, please remember to click the subscribe button on whatever platform you're using, Apple, Spotify, or Google. And we're now joined by my co-host, Miles Nelligan, here to talk about technology, telematics, and the future of the insurance business with Helena Kingsley-Tompkins and Paulette Truman.
Thanks very much, Danielle. Helena and Paulette, welcome to Focus on Finance.
Hi, Miles. Glad to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Helena, you've published a report that looks at how technology is going to change the insurance business. And it looks as though technology will bring opportunities in the short term, but some risks in the longer term. What do you see as the main short-term opportunities for the industry?
Sure. So technology could offer insurers some very exciting benefits over the coming years. And the key area of focus is on technology that can enhance insurers' data capabilities. Data analytics is absolutely core to the insurance business model because they make money by finding trends and patterns in data which enable them to measure risk and optimize prices. Now, there's lots of different kinds of data, but for insurers, machine data is by far the most interesting. So here we're talking about data that's generated by sensors, cameras, and meters that are increasingly being fitted into everyday objects. So insurers that are able to leverage machine data will be able to transform the way they operate, beginning with their underwriting functions.
So how exactly does machine data help insurers? Can you give us any illustrative examples?
Yeah, of course. So maybe thinking about health insurance, a company that develops capabilities to leverage smart wearable devices will be able to track and monitor a customer's real-time vital stats, so their heart rate, pulse, as well as their fitness levels, and we'll be in a much better position to determine how likely they are to, say, have a heart attack compared to a traditional insurer that just uses static, indirect indicators like a person's age, occupation, or where they live. And actually, in the same way, telematics technology could enable motor insurers to monitor real-time driving habits and set premiums accordingly.
Okay, that does sound like a real competitive advantage. But in your report, you also point out that in the longer term, smart devices could in fact erode traditional insurance earnings. Why is that exactly?
So as smart devices become more sophisticated and prevalent, they have the potential to make the world around us a safer place, thereby transforming the very risks that insurers are protecting against. So, you know, as an example, as driverless cars become the new norm, the number of traffic accidents and therefore motor insurance claims will reduce drastically. And over time, so will insurance premiums and their earnings.
So your report also looks at how technology is forcing insurers to change the way they sell their product. And it looks as though these changes could also chip away at insurers' market share. What's happening on this front?
Despite the huge growth in e-commerce, the vast majority of insurance is still sold through physical agents and in-person meetings. Now, that is changing, accelerated by the pandemic. Consumers have become more willing to buy complex insurance products over the internet. So we're seeing a real push by many companies to develop websites, platforms, and even digital ecosystems to increase their direct sales.
Okay, that sounds like something that smaller insurers in particular might not realistically be capable of. Is there an alternative approach?
You're absolutely right. And yes, the alternative approach is to, of course, distribute insurance through third-party companies that already have, a large user base and strong data and web capabilities. So we expect to see insurers increasingly form partnerships with leading companies from various sectors. This could be car makers, smart device manufacturers, even big tech firms. And over time, we may even see insurance being bundled in with related third-party products. So when you buy a smart car in the future, perhaps your motor insurance policy will be embedded within the car lease. And, you know, these partnerships could become a competitive advantage, but there is a risk that over time, insurers become over-reliant on their partners and need to give up more and more profit margin just to maintain their place within the partnership.
Okay, thank you very much, Helena. Paulette, turning to you, a minute ago, Helena talked about telematics, and that was in fact the subject of your recent report, which looks at how telematics are helping US insurers better match premium rates to risk. Can you talk us through how that works in a little more detail?
Sure. First, let's define what we mean by telematics-based auto insurance. It's also referred to as usage-based insurance, or UBI, because it's a type of auto insurance that tracks mileage, but also driving behavior, such as sudden braking, sharp turns, speeding, and the time of day you're on the road. So Based on this data, insurers can reward good drivers with discounts and provide feedback on their driving behavior. So, for privacy reasons, the driver must give consent to be tracked. The tracking is then performed by one of three methods. One, by your cell phone, on which you've downloaded a mobile app from your insurance company. And by the way, this is currently the most commonly used method of data collection. Two, a plug-in device or dongle, which the driver receives from the insurance carrier and then plugs in under the dashboard. Or three, technology that's already built into the car by the automaker. In other words, a connected car or smart car. So the insurer then receives this data on the driver's behavior and plugs it into its scoring model to determine whether the driver can earn a pricing discount. A few insurers may penalize drivers for poor driving by increasing premium. The insurance company also gives feedback to the driver so that he or she can work on better driving.
When you say feedback, do you mean the insurance company would tell you your premiums would be lower if you braked a little more smoothly? Is that the kind of thing you have in mind?
Yes. For the policyholder, getting that immediate driving feedback encourages better driving, which also lowers the cost of auto insurance. And from the driver's perspective, that's the main benefit of signing up for telematics-based insurance. Another benefit for the driver includes quicker assistance in the event of an accident.
Telematics technology sounds in some sense intrusive in that it gives the insurance company a lot of knowledge about your whereabouts and your driving behavior. But nonetheless, it appears to be getting more popular. Is that right?
Some people do think it's intrusive for an insurance company to monitor your driving and know your whereabouts when you're in your car. But as Helena said, the pandemic changed a lot of minds about usage-based car insurance. As cars sat unused in garages, policyholders looked for ways to reduce their insurance costs. And many decided that providing their driving data in exchange for lower insurance costs was the answer. So some states are more strict about insurance carriers' use of this driving data. So to manage the privacy concerns of both regulators and consumers, insurers generally limit the data they collect. As for the growing popularity of usage-based insurance, according to research of Markets and Markets, the global personal auto UBI market will reach almost $67 billion in premiums in the year 2026. And that's up from about, I would say, $20 billion globally for 2021.
Paulette, your report also talks about the fact that kind of in the same time frame that telematics was growing like this, that many automakers in the last year have started selling auto insurance on commission, so they get a piece of that insurance business. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, does this distribution also benefit insurance companies?
Danielle, I think this is the most interesting development in auto insurance, and it may lead to other transformational changes over time. In the past 12 to 18 months, automakers have set up licensed insurance agencies because when they sell a car, they're well positioned to also sell insurance to the new car buyer. And not just auto insurance, but also insurance covering home, RVs, and even pets. As an agent, automakers earn a commission on this insurance sale, and they take no underwriting risk. So it's pure fee revenue for them. Insurers have partnered up with automakers because they can reach more customers this way, especially if they work with the automakers to establish white label insurance products. Two examples of these white label arrangements are GM with the American Family Insurance Group and Toyota with Farmers. So even though telematics-based insurance could drive down premiums for insurers, as Helena mentioned, the potential of these new distribution channels could grow policy counts. The digitization of cars, in other words, smart cars, is giving automakers the ability to collect driving data.
Both your report and Helena's mentioned that Tesla already has started offering its own insurance, although I think right now it is limited to Tesla customers. But what do you think of automakers as a competitive threat for insurers?
Great point, Danielle. As automakers learn about auto insurance risk from their connected car data, they could compete with insurers because they'll gain a better understanding of how to underwrite these insurance policies, especially as they manufacture cars with more autonomous features that provide data on the performance of the car. Still, there are pretty high barriers to entry, including capital requirements and regulation. So it'll be interesting to watch the evolution of the auto insurance industry over the next decade.
Paulette, Helena, Miles, Sunny, and Jasper, thank you all very much for your insights. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. To read any of the reports referenced in this episode, just click the link for this episode at about.moodys.io/podcasts. And please tune in again on Wednesday, February 9th for the next episode of Focus on Finance.